on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello and welcome to this week's 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio, the show we run up all of your latest local sports news and best community stories from around the county. Well, Cambridge United left it late last night to snatch a point at fellow promotion challengers Cheltenham in League Two. Paul Mullen equalised in the 95th minute to make it 1-1. The draw leaves the youth third in the table, 4 points behind leaders Newport County. Matt Lockwood joins us to review the match. We'll also have audio from Mark Bonner as well. Well, Neil Robertson and Joe Perry, two of our local snooker players, get underway in the UK Championship this afternoon. The Aussie, Neil Robertson, takes on Brian Okoyski, and Joe Perry takes on Alex Borg. We'll have snooker reporter from the Metro, Phil Haig, joining us to preview the tournament later on. And following the recent announcement from the government that gyms will be able to reopen from the 2nd of December after the recent lockdown measures come to an end, we're joined by local PT and fitness instructor Junior Herbert from JH Fitness Academy. He joins us to discuss his anticipation in returning to the gym and reopening again for a second time this year. So thank you very much for tuning in this evening. My name is Ollie Slack. If you want to get in touch, you can do. You can email us sport@cambridge105.co.uk or contact us on social media at 105 Sport on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. We're not quite yet ready to return to the studio on Wednesday evening, but it doesn't mean you can't get in touch. So let's start with Cambridge United then this evening. And oh, they left it late last night against Cheltenham, coming from behind to equalise in the 95th minute. I think it was Paul Mullen secured the points for the Utes. It leaves them third in the table, 4 points behind leaders Newport in League Two. We've got Matt Lockwood on the line with us now. Matt, thanks for coming on the show. Matt, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, very well, thank you. If you can, removing all expletives, of course, what did you say? What did you shout and jump up for joy, I imagine, when Paul Mullen poked it home last night in the 95th minute?
The polite version is, get in, you son. Very, very good. We haven't had a late goal like that for a little while, have we? No. It's been a little while, and you know, the last one, obviously, we had was, you know, Barrow at home when they scored in the 90+6. And, you know, it felt like a defeat then, but last night absolutely felt like a win and, you know, a really, really good point last night. I think we would deserve it off a point. You know, on the flip side, as we say, you know, against Barrow, we deserved nothing and got the point. But last night, we deserved the point and more. Absolutely pleased with the team. I thought they played really well yesterday, and you know, the goal at the end, you know, was just reward for some really good hard work. You know, some hard work, hard effort. You know, really good organisation, and overall, as I say, you know, we probably had the better chances through the game, Ollie, and you know, Cheltenham are a very good side, and you know, Mark said it as well. You know, very well organised. They're a very good team. They'll be up there at the end of the season. And, you know, for us to go there, just as we are now, you know, to get a really good point, you know, a really well-deserved point, you know, it bodes well going forward.
They're a resilient bunch, these lot, aren't they?
Absolutely. You know, they definitely have that sort of never give up attitude, never say die attitude. And it's pleasing to see, and something we haven't seen for such a long time now. And, you know, credit has to go to Mark Bonner as well. You know, putting three strikers on just as a, you know, as a last roll of the dice, as it just looked at the moment when we weren't really going to get back into the game and create anything. You know, we just looked like we'd sort of run out of ideas, and, you know, the steam had kind of run out of us. And as I say, Cheltenham being incredibly well organised, you know, defensively sound. You know, it was basically almost 11 men behind the ball, you know, coming into sort of the 80th minute. Very good gamesmanship as well, has to be said. You know, knew how to just kind of run the game, clock down as much as they could. And, you know, for us to pull it back was absolutely fantastic. And, you know, they've got to keep going. You know, we've said it before and we'll keep saying it throughout this season. You know, it's a long season. And if that's the minimum that they can keep delivering, Ollie, I think, you know, we won't be too far away this year.
Yeah, let's hear from Mark Bonner now quickly then, speaking after the match last night.
We sort of had the experience of conceding a late goal in the last game that we played. So we know that you can go to the wire and still have a chance. We had some good chances. Paul Mullen first half 1v1, and Joey had a header, and Luke Hannon, after a great bit of football, fizzed one just wide of the post. We felt we deserved something out of the game. We were resilient, we were strong, we kept at it. We found it hard at times up the slope second half against a back five that give you no space and constantly hit diags to get you back up the pitch, and you have to defend your box all day against those diagonals and the number of crosses that they get in with real good quality and the long throws. We defended those situations brilliantly. We felt a bit hard done by with the goal against us in the first half, despite our wall being poor. The game was over, the time was up, but the game's gone on too long. But that is what it is. We didn't want that to become the story. We wanted the story to be a team that can fight and can come back and compete with the top teams. And yet again, we have. So I love this team.
Yeah, you keep saying that they're a side that have got a characteristic now, which is to hate losing.
Yeah, and always responds in games and between games. You know, it's a long time since the last game, and it's quite a while until the next one. We don't want to be sat for a week thinking about the next game and having not had the result. And where we concede late against Barrow and it's a draw and it feels like a defeat, we score late today and it feels like a win. It's a big point. And I said to Paul Mullen, that's probably his biggest goal for us, his most important one of the 14 that he's now got. We're thrilled to be jumping on the bus with something.
Yeah, you'll be pleased for Paul, as you quite rightly point out, say 14 this season. That's probably as precious as any of the ones that he's got prior to tonight. And it's just underlines what a quality striker he is in terms of the fact that he needs very few opportunities. And he got very few opportunities tonight, but when the chance fell for him, he tucked it away.
He did. He should have scored first half when he was one-on-one with a goalkeeper, but he'd be delighted with the one that he did get, and it obviously comes at a crucial time for us. He splits his head open on half-time, has some stitches at half-time, wipes the blood off his face and goes out second half and does what he does. You know, that's what we are. We're a team that just fight and want to put ourselves out there and put our bodies on the line. You saw what it meant to us at the end, the reaction from the players. There's a real spirit and togetherness amongst us, and we want to keep this going for as long as we can.
Thanks to BBC Radio Cambridgeshire for that audio. So Matt, let's just quickly review the match and analyse the game before we talk ahead of what's to come, which to be fair isn't a lot because there isn't a game on Saturday. But last night it was a bit of a cagey game to start with, wasn't it? It seemed both teams were quite wary of the opposition's strengths.
Yeah, they were. And, you know, we probably had a little bit more of the ball early on, quite happy to pop it about a bit. You know, trying to get it down the wings. As we say, you know, Cheltenham very, very good, you know, with their wing back formation, very quick to get back and defend the ball when they've lost it. And, you know, it was a sort of lot of misplaced passes. And, you know, we've made a lot about the wind this season as well. There seems to be a lot of wind going on in this country at the moment. And, you know, Cheltenham probably struggling to deal with it for the first couple of minutes. And, you know, we were trying to get into sort of the channels, get the ball into Paul Mullen, who's making the early runs and everything. And, you know, when you've got Luke Hannon and Harrison Dunk obviously going down the wings as well, you know, it's the way that we were always going to try and play. So, yeah, it was very, very cagey first few minutes. But, you know, I thought we had a bit more sort of endeavour, you know, a little bit more attacking threat than what they had in any of their sort of long throws, which are a set piece within their own right. We dealt with them really, really well. You know, probably one of the most comfortable sort of defensive displays from that sort of, you know, set piece type of thing that we've had for quite a while. So, you know, going into it, and then of course, you know, we can't, you know, we had the chance with Wes Suleiman's free kick being swung in and Robbie Cundy in the back post just missing it. And then, you know, the biggest chance in the first half, apart from Cheltenham's goal, you know, Paul Mullen, you know, getting clean through. Probably should have done better, Ollie. The goalkeeper did very well, it has to be said. You know, he came out very quickly and, you know, smothered the ball. But I thought, you know, a striker in form like Paul Mullen is, you know, I thought he'd buried that. It's sort of meat and drink for him. And then, you know, going into half-time, you think, you know, if we keep it at 0-0, we'll be absolutely happy with that. But then the referees had I don't know. How can you put it politely? A meltdown, a mind meltdown. Gives a free kick for absolutely nothing to Cheltenham when, you know, as I say, it was probably our free kick at the time. And then, you know, we go into half-time, the ball comes in, the free kick comes in. It's probably a good save from Dimi. Maybe you could have pushed it a little bit further away from the goal, but, you know, it was a fierce strike and there's three of them compared to sort of one of our defenders. And, you know, whether it's offside or not, I'm not too sure, but it, you know, it was a poor goal to give away just on the stroke of half time.
Yeah, it certainly was. And you make a great point about the throw-ins, Matt, as well, for Cheltenham, and that we almost take for granted now how defensively solid the Ewes are from these situations when years gone by would have probably made them look a right mess and a real stressful situation. But so many times they just head the ball away, whether it be Digby, Taylor, Cundy or Darling when he's in there, and we just take it for granted. Creatively, though, Matt, where do you think the Ewes are at the minute? Because we've seen on the counter-attack, whether that's winning the ball back high up the pitch or even pretty low on the pitch, their ability to break and counter quickly with Dunk, Hannon, etc. is, well, you'd be struggling to find a side better in the league at it. But there just seems to be occasional times, I'm just thinking the games maybe Shrewsbury, Barrow a bit and maybe last night at times, that they just struggle to break teams down a little bit when they're really deep and in a block. Would you go along with that? Where do you feel the user act creatively at the minute?
Yeah, no, I do agree with that. I do think, you know, teams that come to our place, and I mean, Barrow are fantastic. As we said, I thought, you know, they're one of the best football sides I've seen this season. And, you know, they came here to get in our faces, and our formation and probably our lineup as well was wrong for that game. You know, we just forced in too many players that had been injured into the game. You know, and I think they struggled. And of course, you know, Hiram Baratang's played about sort of 7-8 games now, all in a row, you know, and he hadn't played football for almost a year before that. So, you know, against Barrow, you know, they deserved all the credit because they were fantastic. And, you know, I think we got everything wrong. And, you know, going into last night, as I say, you know, we had those opportunities. We're very good, like you say, getting forwards, you know, with Hannon, with Dong, with Marlin, you know, breaking away very quickly. And but yeah, there is this sort of slight creative issue, and I mean, everybody will turn around and say, oh, you know, we've struggled a lot more when Houlihan hasn't played, and there is a case for that, of course. You know, that absolutely right. You know, we do seem to be a little bit better, and we saw it yesterday as well. You know, create some good chances. You know, the free kick that Robbie Cundy just couldn't get to, and you know, he had a opportunity, a nice little flick into I think it was Hannon who just put it wide. So you know, he's our creative player, but as you say, the issue is if we haven't got Wes Houlihan, or Wes Houlihan is out of the game, there's kind of nobody else really to kind of step up. And you know, maybe that's something that they're going to look at going into January. Of course, I don't think, you know, Wes will, you know, if we get another sort of, you know, a full season, another half season out of him, then, you know, I think we've done well. But he seems to be doing all right. He seems to be pretty fit, actually, in fairness. So, you know, maybe he could go one more. But, yeah, we're a little bit light in the creative department, that's for sure. Even we need sort of an out-and-out pacey winger, you know, to really come on and change the game and stretch it, like David and me used to when we used to bring him on, a player like him. Or, you know, if we can find another sort of, you know, a younger Wes Houlihan out there somewhere, which we'd all love, wouldn't we? You know, I think it'd be good. I mean, Hiram Baratang, I thought, had a really good game last night, was driving us forward. And I think, you know, there's a lot more in terms of, you know, his passing ability to come from him. But, you know, he's starting to show it. You know, he's starting to get that match fitness in now as well. And he's shown what a massive asset he is to this team. So, you know, I think it will come. You know, I think, you know, at times when we do play out wide, we need Joe Ironside on the pitch to get his head on the ball. I mean, he had a glorious chance, which he put wide, and he probably should have scored with. You know, and I think he obviously makes a difference when we've got two out-and-out wingers. So, you know, we're still scoring goals, and that's the main thing, Ollie. If we weren't scoring goals, I think we'd be a lot more concerned. But for now, the ball's going in the back of the net at least once, which is the main thing.
Exactly, yeah. And the main reason I asked that question, not necessarily a criticism, but because the main talking point after the game was, in fact, that whether the Ewes are better with two up top, i.e. Paul Mullen and Joe Ironside, or one up top and the number 10. So, for example, Paul Mullen and Wes Houlihan. I mean, the number 10 has worked at times in the past. Probably more recently, Giovanni Brown was the standout in that position. I know Kwesi Appiah used to drop into that role at times, but was obviously generally an out-and-out striker with Adam Cunnington. But do you see the Ewes being better with two up top, Matt? Or don't you mind? Are you either or horses for courses with regards to two up top or the number 10?
Yes and no. Sit on the fence there. I think away from home, I think the formation we played last night with the number 10, with Houlihan in behind Mullin, I think that suits us very, very well. At home, it's going to be interesting. And of course, you know, with the potential issue with crowds coming in, there's always going to be that sort of temptation to go sort of more attacking, you know, 4-4-2, and really drive at the, you know, at the opposition. And I think, you know, with home games, that'll be something maybe Mark will look at a lot more. But away from home, I think, you know, the one behind the striker absolutely works well for us. It allows Boateng and Paul Digby just to sit in there, and it allows Boateng as well to push further forward, you know, to form a sort of a, you know, 4-4-5 on the opposition box, and just allows Paul Digby just to sort of put, you know, patrol in front of the back four, which is what he's, you know, his best position and what he's best at. So I'd like to think that Mark looks at it game by game, which I don't have a problem with. I don't have a problem with him, you know, changing the system. Like we said, you know, we spoke about last night, you know, taking the gamble and going three up front, you know, something that a Cambridge United manager hasn't done in a long, long time, which is pleasing to see that he's willing to risk it as well. So, but, you know, the 4-4-2 has worked before, and we've seen that, you know, and Joe Ironside and Paul Mullin can work well together, but it's got to be the right ball. And that's the thing. Sometimes we haven't played the right ball into Joe Ironside. You know, we've aimed the ball towards Paul Mullin, which is no good. Joe Ironside is our target man, you know, the big man up top as such. And, you know, that type of ball, it's got to be played into him rather than Paul Mullin. You know, we've got to go sort of over the top to allow Paul Mullin to run onto. So, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, as long as Mark is looking at it game by game and he's picking the right formation, and 9 times out of 10 he's got it right, you know, I don't mind him changing formation. For me, the one behind the striker, the sort of 4-2-3-1 seems to suit us a little bit more, even with Joe Ironside in it as well, it has to be said at times. So, you know, it's nice to have that flexibility for once. Nice to talk about flexible systems rather than sort of 4-4-2 and, yeah, you know, and everything else on it. It's nice to have those sort of squad issues and the strength and depth to be able to change the system quite fluidly.
Exactly, yeah. How many years have we spoke about managers not having a plan B, etc.? And it does seem there's very much horses for courses, and adaptation seems to be Mark Bonner's buzzword this season. He's very much like that. Just quickly, Matt, really quickly, no game on Saturday due to it being the FA Cup second round. Of course, we're out. Is that help or a hindrance?
I think it'll be help. I think it'll be a really big help again. I think, you know, we'll be gunning for Mansfield next Wednesday. As I say, with hopefully a crowd, fingers crossed, of course, we're all looking forward to it. Yeah, we're hoping all the crowds will be back, and if they are, it'll be a massive lift. The players will be refreshed, and hopefully, you know, Mark will get them fired up to come out, you know, saying, you know, this is a big game for us, you know, in terms of having the fans back in. Let's go out there and just show what they're watching on the streams and everything. Isn't just a fluke, you know, we are that good of a side, and you know, we want to put a show on for these fans who have supported us through this all. So I'm hoping, as I say, I think, you know, it'll be a massive rest for the players again, ready for that really busy Christmas run that is coming up. It's going to be heavy on the legs again. But, you know, starting with a win on Wednesday, mate, against Mansfield, that'll be absolutely fantastic, won't it?
It would be absolutely lovely, and it'd be great if fans were there as well. Matt, thanks very much for joining us, mate. And fingers crossed you can get back at the Abbey soon.
Yep. Cheers, mate. Take care.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Sport on Cambridge 105 Radio.
So welcome back to the 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Let's talk snooker now, and Cambridge-based Neil Robertson and Chatterton's Joe Perry in action today at the UK Championship first round. Robertson takes on Brian Okoski, and Joe Perry takes on Alex Borg. Snooker reporter for the Metro, Phil Haig, joins us now to discuss their chances at lifting the title, the first Triple Crown event of the season. Phil, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
How are you doing? You well?
Yeah, good, thank you. As well as can be expected.
How was the last few weeks been? I think since we last spoke, we've been out of lockdown and back in lockdown.
Yeah, it's been a funny one. Yeah, back in the office and now back home again. Still not been able to get to any of the tournaments, but it seems back-to-back snooker on the TV at the minute, so can't complain if you're a snooker fan, really.
No, quite right. I was going to say, have you managed to see much snooker live in the flesh at all?
No, not at all. There's been been very restricted to sort of one or two media people per tournament, so it's been very competitive. So yeah, not been up to Milton Keynes yet, but it looks like potentially there's going to be a crowd at the Masters in January, and then maybe even in Germany that month as well. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, fantastic. We'll come on to that a little bit more later on. Now, with regards to the UK Championship, because the first Triple Crown event of the season has arrived, and it is, unfortunately, though, because it's usually up in York, I believe, it's still at the Marshall Arena in Milton Keynes.
Yeah, exactly. The Barbican Centre in York is where it's been held for the last few years. And it's really one of the highlights of the tour. All the players love it. York, just before Christmas time, got all the markets. It's just a nice place to be. but obviously, the restrictions are still in place. So, like every other tournament so far this season, it's in Milton Keynes, which I think people are getting a bit bored of. But no, I think everyone realises what situation we're in, so everyone's getting on with it. A lot of the players are just happy to be playing, really. And they know it could be a lot worse.
Yeah, I think we joked last time that Milton Keynes could become the home of snooker, but it could actually quite happen because the amount of tournaments they're playing there is quite a lot. Anyway,
yeah, absolutely. It certainly has been the home of snooker so far this season.
Well, fingers crossed, none of the Triple Crown events or any of the big events, the World Championship either, will be heading that way, and we can get back to some normality with where events are held across the country. But as we said, the UK Championship starting on Monday. How's it been? How's the form of the players been?
Yeah, it's been good. Had a 147 yesterday. Kyron Wilson knocked in a max, which was great. There's been a few sort of minor shocks. None of the real big names gone out so far, but there's been some good, impressive performances. Ronnie O'Sullivan's playing tonight. Judd Trump's playing tomorrow. So, yeah, just sort of bubbling up early on. And it's been nice. Usually the first round isn't on TV, which I've never really got my head around why they haven't shown it, but they are for the first time this season. So we've been able to watch it all.
And that is on Eurosport, isn't it, this year, for the first round?
Yeah, early on, and then the last stages was on the BBC as well.
And with regards to our local players, Phil, Neil Robertson. Now, I've been sort of, as we usually do, following quite closely, and his form seemed pretty good. But then he came across a certain someone called Ben Wollaston.
Yeah, exactly. So, he's found his kryptonite there, because, as you say, he's been in superb form this season, fine at the English Open, fine at the Champions, playing brilliantly. And then, yeah, lost to Ben Wollaston the last two tournaments, which is an upset. I mean, don't get me wrong, Ben's a very good player. He's sort of, I feel like he should be higher up the rankings. So it's not like he's lost an absolute unknown. But yeah, it's strange that he's lost to him twice in a couple of weeks. I think it might be part of the sort of every tournament being in the same place, feeling a bit the same, maybe get a bit lackadaisical about things in the sort of smaller tournaments, if you will. But yeah, I expect him to be right back on it at the UK Championship this week.
I would say, is it one of those where if it had been one defeat, you'd have probably just said, oh, forget it, park it, move on. But two defeats, he must be scratching his head a bit if it was going on.
Yeah, strange, yeah. It is. I mean, he's one of these players that expects to win every time he picks up his cue. So yeah, he'll be frustrated by it. But the short format games, these sort of best of sevens, you can lose to anyone, really. Wollaston has a fantastic record of winning first-round matches. He very rarely loses one. But then he has lost his first-round UK Championship match this week. So he's not kept it up in the big one. But yeah, I mean, Robertson's been around long enough to sort of, I'm sure he'll brush that aside and be ready for, as I say, the big one this week.
And with every tournament being in Milton Keynes, like you touched on, it must be pretty weird turning up to the same place every time to play a tournament. And also test that levels of concentration, that real mentality to the desire to win consistently, you know, week in, week out, when you're turning up at the same venue and it's probably getting a bit boring and tiresome.
Yeah, exactly. It's a real test, especially for the guys like Robertson, Trump, people like that, who are going deep in every tournament. So, I mean, Trump, when he lost to the Champions, was saying he's just so sick of being in that same room over and over again. They are making an effort to sort of make the big tournaments feel bigger and feel a bit different. So they are doing that at the UK Championship. They did it at the Champion of Champions. So that sort of keeps the mind awake a bit. But yeah, a lot of the other tournaments just look and feel exactly the same. So yeah, you're right. It is a mental strain and a test of concentration.
Now, Robertson won the UK Championship in 2015, but he's not got past the last 16 since. What are his chances this year?
Yeah, it's funny that he's not done so well last 4 years. But I think his chances are really, really good this year. As ever, he's sort of one of the top three or four players going into the tournament, one of the favourites. It'll be very, very difficult to beat. I find it strange how few Triple Crowns he's won, really. he's equally hard to explain how he's not done better at the World Championships as well, despite, I mean, he has won this one twice before, but just had a barren spell the last few years. But yeah, as I said before, his form's been great. A couple of finals, could easily have won them, both of them. So yeah, he'll be expected to go a long way.
And Chatteris's Joe Perry, what's his form been like? Because I believe he's not got past a second round match all season.
Yeah, not had a great start to the season, really. He got to the third round. That was the Championship League. So, I mean, yeah, that is ranking this season, but it didn't count so much as the other ones. But yeah, no, he's not been at his best. He had a good first round win in Northern Ireland, beat Robbie Williams 4-0, but then a bit of a surprise loss to Alan Taylor. So yeah, it's been patchy so far. Patchy might be a bit generous, actually. It's not been great. He should be fine in the first round here in the UK Championship. He's playing Alex Borg, who really doesn't win very many matches at all. So you'd expect him to go well there. And he's had some really good performances in the UK Championship over the years. A couple of semi-finals, four quarter-finals. I think throughout the last 3 years he's been to the quarters. So if he's going to spring back into life, it may well be in this event.
I was going to say, might it take a big tournament like this, a Triple Crown event, just to really spark his season and get him going a bit?
Yeah, maybe. That might be it, actually. Yeah, as I say, all the other ones sort of feel a bit mundane, a bit samey. And he'll be raring to go for this one, for sure. I saw his first appearance at the UK Championship was way back in 1994. He's been playing this tournament for a long, long time. but yeah, he'll certainly be up for it. And yeah, as I say, he'll be fine in the first round. And then hopefully he'll get a bit of momentum from there on in.
1994, it's a long career. Just to make every single person listening feel old, I was -5 in 1994. Phil, I want you to predict your final fours. Who will make the semi-finals and then a winner from that four?
Oh, crikey, all four semi-finals. Selby looks very good. I'm going to be quite boring with these, actually. Yeah, Mark Selby will come through. Ronnie O'Sullivan will come through. Hopefully we'll see O'Sullivan-Trump in that semi-final. So, actually, no, Robertson and Selby are in the same section. It's only one of them. Okay.
Remember, you're on a Cambridge radio station, Phil.
Yeah, no. Well, Robertson, spoiler alert, Robertson's my tip for the whole tournament.
Oh,
I'm not just saying that because I'm on here. I did say that before. So I'll have to go Robertson. I'm saying O'Sullivan and Trump because they were just in a final last week against each other. So the other semi-finalists from the top section, I will pick someone a bit more left field because they're all a bit too obvious. John Higgins isn't very left field. I'm going to go with Zhao Yulong, who's the world number 24 Chinese player, one of the more promising youngsters from China. He's actually been a pro since 2014 and he's only 22. That's how young he started. He's developing every year. He's looking more and more impressive. So yeah, let's say Zhao to get through to the other semi-final.
And you are plucking for Robertson to win?
Yeah, I mean, there's four or five players where there's very little between them. And you could pick Trump, O'Sullivan, Selby, Robertson, maybe even Mark Allen after his champions win. And it would be hard to disagree with any of them. So it's not too scientific approach to plump for one of them. But as I said before, I think Robertson's just due one, really. It's mad that he's not done better in the Triple Crowns in recent years. He's so impressive. He never looks like he's going to miss when he's amongst the balls. So it's not the cleverest of argument, but I think he's just due one. So I'm going to go with Neil Robertson.
Well, we will hope it will be Robertson or, of course, Joe Perry. But that would be a turn for the books, judging by his form this season. Phil, just lastly then, on crowds, you touched on it at the start. Just clarify when we're expecting crowds to come in, what sort of regulations they'll have to follow in regards to socially distance, etc. And also, what on the Chinese events as well, whether that's changing at all.
So yeah, based on the announcement earlier this week, indoor crowds are allowed up to 1,000, I think, as long as that's 50% of capacity, whichever's left. So they're looking at the Masters at Alexandra Palace in January. But it also depends on what tier the venues are in. So we'll find that out later this week. So it's still up in the air, but Will Snook will be hoping to see a crowd of some sort in January. But as we found out at the World Championship, things can change very quickly. They had they had crowds in on the opening day and they were gone by the second day. So we'll see what happens after Christmas. But yeah, provisionally, there could be a crowd in at the Masters, which would be great. It'd be 1,000 people, so that would be better than none. And I know the players looking forward to that if possible. The Chinese events, they still don't know really. It's not looking great anytime soon. They've sort of pushed them back as far as possible to the end of the season to give them as much chance as being able to be played. So still waiting to hear. We'll see. Potentially none, but hopefully they're trying to squeeze a couple in before the World Championship if possible.
Well, Phil, it's been great to chat to you again. Thanks very much. Glad you're well. And viva Neil Robertson.
Yeah, absolutely. Best of luck to him and thank you for having me.
Cheers, Phil.
Cheers.
On Cambridge 105 Radio.
You're listening to the 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Up next, after we're done here at 7 o'clock this evening, is Tim Willett with the new music generator. Tim presents Cambridge 105 Radio's flagship show dedicated to local and unsigned music. It also features the latest unsigned charts. So then let's move on. And of course, as we know, lockdown restrictions are being eased next week. This time next week, the 2nd of December. One of the major businesses that will be happy with that news is gyms and leisure centres, etc., as they will be allowed to reopen from next week. I'm glad to say joining us now to discuss that news is local PT Junior Herbert from JH Fitness Academy. Junior, thank you very much for coming back on the show.
Thanks for inviting me again.
Yeah, good to see you again. How's the last few months been? It's been a couple of months or so since we last spoke. It was more in the summer, I think.
Yeah, that's right. It's just been a bit of a roller coaster of getting back to normality. It's been, it was really good for a while where we were able to get the gyms back up and running, get people back into the gym, meet people actually live in person as opposed to online. And then bang, they sort of hit us again and said, right, we're going to be in the lockdown, which sort of, I think it took a lot of people out of the stride because we were getting back to a nice bit of a normality of life. And like I said, back in the actual gym. So lockdown came. People were like, gosh, do we have to go through this again? But the majority of people did go through it again, and we have, I've sort of managed to get through it all. Some of the classes I've then had to sort of stop because I just wasn't really foreseeable to do it. But majority of classes, managed to carry on online. And so they're up and running. But it's, I think the novelty of the, after that initial sort of good sort of 7 months of lockdown, just sort of we'd got through it. So to suddenly go back has been hard. But, you have to try and get through it, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, there's been a recent announcement from the government as well around the finishing of the second lockdown on the 2nd of December, of course, or in about a week's time, pretty much exactly that, and that the gyms would be able to reopen again. How much delighted were you to hear that news?
I think pretty much, all my clients especially are, they're really excited about actually being able to get back into the gym. So obviously, as the government likes to do, it's a little bit confusing trying to sort of work through what's going to happen, what's not going to happen, and we're going to have to wait and see what tier we're going to be in. But everyone's really, they just want to get back into the gym. I think they appreciate what it actually does for people and stuff. So my clients are all excited. And I'm actually looking forward to seeing some live faces again as opposed to on the screen.
I was going to say that must be a really nice feeling for you, because primarily one of the main reasons you do this job is for that social interaction and really helping to nurture people through their fitness, and obviously having that taken away and just chatting to them through a computer like we are, must have been pretty frustrating over the last few months.
Yeah, it's hard because, you know, you got to, all of a sudden you got, you know, I've had to learn a new set of skills in a way of how to, you know, how to interact. You know, it's sort of just on screen. It's not the same as being there in person. So it has been hard, you know, it's been a process, but I sort of feel a bit of a veteran of it now. I've been doing it for so, you know, for the last so many months. I've done, you know, gosh knows how many classes I've actually done online. So I'm pretty adept at it now and, you know, I'm pretty happy with doing it. But, it, you know, I'm excited to get back in the actual gym with, but, you know, with live human beings, you know, seeing people face to face, it's going to be good, you know. Obviously, for the people doing it in the house, as much as they've managed to do a bit in the house, it, you know, it's hard for them to try and, you know, a lot of my clients have been making, you know, their home has been not only a family home, but it's also been an office, and then they've had to make it into a gym and then back to a family home. So I think a lot of people are really looking forward to having the gym to actually go into. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
And just quickly, Junior, if you could just explain, obviously we'll know more details tomorrow, Thursday, when the government announced the tiered systems, but just explain some of the things you've done to make your gym COVID secure.
Yeah, for myself, with the COVID secure bit, what I've done, I did like an online course, just sort of giving me all the details I needed, what to do. But all my clients, when they come in, they have to hand sanitize straight away. That's one of the sort of first things they do. All the equipment is wiped down before they use it, and then there's stations for every time they use the equipment. We've got wipes and stuff out so that as soon as they've used it, they wipe it down, keep a note of the social distancing with a lot, you know, whenever I plan the workouts now, I always make sure that there's going to be social distance in between, you know, whatever sort of stuff, you know, sort of stations they're doing. Obviously one-to-one is a lot easier for that, but it's more the group classes I'm trying to make sure distancing is kept as, you know, as good as it can be, and also try to keep them in a bit of a bubble so that if two people are going to be close, it's always the same two people. So a bit like how the school system sort of works with keeping people in the bubbles, and I've been sort of trying to apply that system a bit, so sort of people have like a set partner who they'll be close to if, you know, if they have to get close. So it's that stuff. And obviously common sense, I've told anyone, you know, the thing is anyone who has any sort of symptoms are immediately sort of inform me, informing
you sure.
They've been with, and obviously they, you know, they'll sort of isolate if they, you know, and see if they can get a test and stuff. So, you know, it's down to the individuals as well to use common, I think, you know, common sense is one of the main things which will combat this disease, you know, I think that's what, you know, we need now to, you know, to sort of get through this. Yeah.
And how have people's attitudes perhaps changed, Junior, over time, the trends of how people want to exercise? I think we spoke last time and said that you said because generally people have been furloughed, they'd second more time to exercise. How have you found it over the second lockdown, the period when you returned for a bit? Have you seen people's attitudes change?
I'd say there've been more, as I said, it's been hard for people to go back into, you know, let's go back on the camera. But they have gone back, and I'd say the consistency has actually been better. They've been, you know, I think they've sort of accepted it's not going to be a couple of weeks, so I'll just, you know, sort of
give up. Yeah.
They're like, you know what, we're just going to, you know, because that couple of weeks is, that can be for some of the people, it can be 6 or 8 sessions that they could do in that 2 weeks. And I think they've sort of decided, you know what, I'm going to do this, or I will just make sure I show up. And like I said before, the excuse of, you know, getting there on time and stuff, that's been taken out of people's hands, that your gym is literally in your, you know, in your living room or your garage or whatever, so you don't have to worry about the distance of getting there. So people's attitude on the second lockdown has been, right, we are going to do this, and they've been consistent. The numbers are actually higher, I'd say, than the first lockdown.
And what tips would you give to anyone thinking about exercising now when we return? Because I'd imagine the excuses can stack up a little bit. We can say it gets darker in the evenings now, so we can't go out for a run, and it becomes more difficult to do exercise. But I'd imagine you'd say it's really important that we keep exercising, both physically and mentally.
Yeah, I think everyone's actually, you know, obviously we had the debate in the government a little while ago, you know, I think it was only 2 days ago, because I signed the petition, like probably most of the sort of gym owners and fitness people in the business. They signed it, and I think they've acknowledged now that, you know, doing fitness and stuff is, as much as the physical benefit, it's important for your mental health. So I think everyone kind of knows now that you're not just doing it for physical sort of benefits, you're doing it for your mental side. So just doing so, even if, you know, because all of a sudden just going out and walking is actually appreciated now as something to do, which will help clear your mind and stuff. So it's got to a stage where sort of less excuses, just find 20, 30 minutes and just do something, you know, just try and move and just clear your head a little bit. I think everyone's sort of starting to understand that side of it now, that you can, you know, there's always an excuse, but there's always a way around it. So rather than looking for an excuse, look for the solution to that excuse and try and, you know, you can do something. There's always something you can do, you know.
And lastly, your tips then would just be, like you say, find 20, 30 minutes, just get up, get moving, get active.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you sort of summed it up, really.
Because a lot of people will be sat at their desk, won't they? Obviously working and working for quite a majority of the day.
Oh, so yeah, sure. Yeah, with that, it's it would be especially if you're working from home, because again, you haven't got that restriction of if you're working from an office. Like, you can literally set your time and say, right, I'm going to do every hour on the hour. I'm going to do 10 press ups, 10 squats, 10 sit ups. Walk to your back garden and back, something like, just to get some fresh air in. And you do that every hour, and, you know, sort of an 8 hour day, that's, you know, that will start to add up, just doing something as simple as that. But you are moving and you are, you know, giving yourself a little bit of break, clearing your head, you know.
Junior, it's been a pleasure chatting to you again. Thanks very much for coming on. I'm sure we'll catch up again soon as the picture ever changes, but thanks very much for coming on.
All right, thanks, Ollie.
Sports on Cambridge 105 Radio.